Always must be a double whammy, a dual holy day, Sabbath, and then the first day of the week, Yom Rishon, or as we say in English, Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. It, uniquely, Pentecost must be that way. Now, there is another festival that can be that way, and occasionally is. First day of unleavened bread can be on a Sunday, then you have a double holy day there, but that happens on an occasion. It's not a must, but with Pentecost it is a must. Now, when that happens, you have a perfect parallel, by the way. When you have the first day of unleavened bread on a Sunday, that's when you would offer the wave sheaf, and then you'd have Pentecost on the 50th day is when you'd offer the first fruits of the wheat harvest. So you have a direct parallel between the two festivals. Usually the parallel is that the wave sheaf is offered within the days of unleavened bread, and then the wave sheaf, and then the first fruits of the wheat harvest offered on the next festival, Pentecost. But in the case when the first day of unleavened bread is a Sunday, there's a even more direct parallel. And we can expand on that theme maybe at another time. Last week when I was putting Hebrew words on the board, I felt like the way I wrote the words, I didn't make enough of a distinction between the letter He and the letter Chet. There was a distinction, and if you had a large enough picture, you would have noticed it, but I'll try to do better when I write my Hebrew words in the future. Today I want to talk about some very important words that we can read in whatever language we read them. They were originally given in Hebrew, but they're repeated in Greek, and then fortunately are universally known. I want to speak about some very important words, what the rabbis call Aseret HaDibrot, the 10 words, or the 10 utterances, the 10 sayings. In some sense, I think you could call them the 10 principles. They are the basis for a proper civilization. They are the basis for the morality that God requires. They are, as the Greek term would be, the Decalogue, or the 10 commandments. Aseret HaDvarim, they are called in the Bible. The 10 words, or, you know, like the British have that expression, you know, when they say they want to have a word with you, it doesn't mean they just want to say hi and leave. Having a word with you means they want to speak with you. In the Bible, they are called the 10 words, but they are indeed commandments, and the Bible makes clear that they are commandments. They are not the 10 suggestions. They are the 10 commandments, as you'll see. So today I want to entitle my talk, Comments on the Ten Commandments. If I've made comments earlier, that's fine. So those were comments made earlier. These are the latest comments I'm making. Comments on the Ten Commandments. You know, you can read in the Bible about a man who broke all of the Ten Commandments. Not only that, he did it all in one moment. That was Moses. Of course, you know what I'm talking about. He broke those tablets when he saw the Israelites just in absolute debauchery, you know, just very serious sin, the sin of the golden calf. And it just so enraged him. He did have a temper problem, as you know, and he did, you know, anger management. And so he did smash those tablets, but they were so critically important. God, in his mercy, not only restored Israel to himself, the people of Israel, but also restored the two tablets. You know, he rewrote those Ten Commandments, and they were then put in the Ark of the Covenant, as we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Salvation, my friends, or any of you who are listening, salvation is a free gift. And we cannot be good enough for what God is going to give us. We can't earn what God wants to give us. But the gift that he gives us is not unconditional. We must begin to live the eternal life he wants to give us in a manner which will indicate that that life indeed will fulfill the purpose for which he's giving it to us. That is to say, that that life will be for good and not for evil. So we don't have to be perfect to be saved, but we do have to be righteous. So yes, salvation is a gift, but salvation is not going to be given to the unrighteous. As I said, none of us are perfect, and none of us can earn it. But by living righteously, we can qualify to receive that gift. You know what Paul said himself in 1 Corinthians 9:27. He himself did not want to disqualify himself. in 1 Corinthians 9:27, Paul said, but I discipline my body. Discipline. But I discipline my body, 1 Corinthians 9:27, and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should have become disqualified. No, we don't want that. So let's go to Matthew 19. Matthew 19. A man comes to Jesus Christ, a good Jewish man, a good and observant person. Before I go any further, let me say that this week, as I said, today is the second day of the third month. This week, coming up on Wednesday, the fourth day of this week, will be the sixth day of the third month. That's the anniversary of the giving of the Ten Commandments, the sixth day of the third month. But it's not when we keep the holy day. We keep the holy day on the day that the old covenant was ratified. The Ten Commandments were a basic statement of principle. There were other laws then. They were expounded, and a whole system was given to the Israelites, a complete package, as you know. It also included enforcement procedures because they were a carnal nation and included certain rituals. They were a carnal people. But the entire package was given, and the old covenant was then ratified, and Pentecost pictures that. But the giving of the law probably did occur on the Sabbath of that year, the sixth day of the third month, which this year occurs on a Wednesday. And in rabbinic tradition, in Pharisaic tradition, that's the day they have chosen to keep their Pentecost. So rabbinic Judaism, which is basically almost all Jews today, would observe Pentecost, therefore, this coming Wednesday, the sixth day of Sivan. But as you know from reading the Bible, Pentecost is not on a fixed date. It's rather on a fixed day. You begin counting the morrow after the Sabbath within the days of unleavened bread, and you count 7 weeks. And so Pentecost occurs on a fixed day of the week, the first day of the week, not on a fixed date. You can read the Bible and see that there's no fixed date for Pentecost. Anyway, it's very meaningful to me, though, that particular date, the 6th of Sivan, because it was the day when I was ordained into the ministry. And if you're a Spanish speaker, I became un anciano predicador, or in English, a preaching elder, on the sixth day of the third month back in 1984. So that would be my 30th anniversary is coming up, right? Am I counting correctly? So the 30th anniversary of my ordination is coming up on Wednesday. So it's interesting. My first festival that I ever kept with the Church of God was Pentecost in 1968. And the first festival that I celebrated as an ordained minister was also Pentecost in 1984. So that's a little bit of personal sharing. I want to go now to Matthew, the 19th chapter, verse 16. Now behold, one came and said to him, good teacher, what thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? So he said to him, why do you call me good? So there's some irony here. In fact, Jesus Christ is God. Not all there is to God, but Jesus Christ is the Word, the Logos. Jesus Christ in the flesh was God in the flesh. The Word had become flesh, as John explains. And so he says, why do you call me good? There is no one is good but one, that is God. So there's some irony here. The man didn't really know what he was saying. So he said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. Now, you know what he could have told him, according to some? He could have said, hang in there just a few more days. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be resurrected. And then you won't need to worry about the commandments anymore. Now, does that make any sense to you? Some people have that kind of theology. Now, okay, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but it is difficult to understand that kind of theology. There are some who hold to that. Anyway, so he said to them, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter life, keep the commandments. He said to him, which ones? And so Jesus began ticking off the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, right? Jesus said, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and your mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So that's really Leviticus 19:18, a summary of the laws of between human and human. You know, the last six commandments are human to human. The first four more directly involve God. The fifth one, in a way, is a transition It relates to God in a sense as our parent. And then it goes on, of course, to focus on the human parent. So it's like a bridge between the two branches there. But you have your responsibilities of human to God and then human to human. And that's what he was focusing on here. But, of course, the basis for morality, the most important basis for morality, the basis for the most effective morality is belief in God. And he goes on to that. If you go to Matthew 12, Jesus quotes the Shema, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. You should love your God with all your heart, with all your soul." And there he says, "with all your mind, with all your strength." Then he goes on to talk about love your neighbor as yourself in Mark 12. And so you have these two pillars, you know, love of God, love of your fellow human being. And so he tells him first these human relationships that are so important. So the young man said to him in verse 20, "All these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack?" Well, what he lacked, in a sense, was a right relationship with God, really putting God first. He was basically a person who was observant, but he wasn't willing to go all the way. And so you see here that we have to love God completely, and that means if God calls us to a certain role, we should be willing to go there. And he was calling him, and the man didn't want to go there. You know, verse 21, Jesus said to him, "If you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." What an opportunity this person had! We don't even know his name. I imagine that if he had said yes, we would know his name. He'd be a great hero in the Bible. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. So he was basically a good person, but wasn't going to go all the way. So we do have to have that complete dedication to God. And if God calls us to some specific role, we need to play it willingly. As Jesus said, "Not my will be done, but your will be done." And then we have the commandments that involve love of God and love of neighbor. And these are 10 commandments. And in fact, Paul talks about these 10 commandments in Ephesians when he talks about the fifth one. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 6, he deals with the relationship of children to parents. And he says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." So obviously, some of you know the story of Fagin, the pickpocket who had, I guess, these children that he trained to be pickpockets. If your parent is teaching you to be a pickpocket, no. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." So he talks about it. The first commandment with promise, because in that commandment there's a specific promise. "That it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth." So that's the promise, you know, and so he says, this is a very important commandment, not that the others are not, but it's the first commandment with promise. He's focusing on it because he's dealing with the relationship of children to parents. But then he goes on to warn the parents. "And you parents, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." So be careful as parents in how you handle your children. So you see that these clearly are commandments, and they clearly are a basis of Christian living. They are the basis of really of human civilization. And if you study the Bible, you'll know that these commandments were enforced before they were put on tablets for Moses. You go back to the early chapters of Genesis and you'll see these commandments in force, and you'll see that they generally were understood by the ancient civilizations. They had their philosophers, their ethical teachers, who taught them not to murder each other, not to steal from each other, to be faithful to their spouses and so on. They had their instruction one way or the other, because as you know from the book of Romans, people were created with a conscience. And so these Ten Commandments were in force. Now the Sabbath is something that would need to be revealed. Obviously, people understand you, if they're reasonable, that you occasionally need to rest. You need a break on occasion. And the rhythm of people is such that 1 out of 7 days is what pretty much I think the whole world now observes. Obviously, if you look at nations such as China, the so-called People's Republic of China is not based on the Judeo-Christian heritage, but I think even in China, unless I'm wrong, people are theoretically working 6 days a week and resting one of those seven, as far as I know. And in most countries, I believe that's the case, whether they are Abrahamic religion, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, or whatever they are. Even Buddhist countries, I think, generally have one day out of seven to rest. So even that has become pretty much a universal standard for an ethical employer. That if you're an ethical employer, you give your employees one day a week off. You know, so even that has become pretty much standard. So these commandments were in force before written on these tablets, and they do represent the basis. They're not everything. You know, there's more to know, obviously, and so that's why we have the rest of the revealed commandments that God has given us, but they are the basis. And as I said, this time of year is important. It's an important time to think about them because this is the anniversary of when they were given, and they were the basis of the covenant. They were probably given on the Sabbath, and then that Sunday, the next day, was when their covenant was ratified in Exodus 24, and that was the first formal Pentecost observed by God's people, and they've been observing Pentecost ever since, as we hope to do coming up very soon. This year, Pentecost will be not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. As I said, we have now completed 6 weeks. We have one more to go, and then this Sunday after that will be Pentecost. There'll be a Sabbath, and then Pentecost. And as I said, the rabbinical Pentecost is Wednesday, and I don't want to go into the background of all of that, but I believe if you just read the Bible objectively, you'll understand why we keep it when we do. If you read the Bible objectively, I think you'll come to that conclusion. Anyway, let's go to Exodus 20. By the way, if you read the background to the Ten Commandments, wow, the drama, the pageantry. Now, that was caught to some degree by the Cecil B. DeMille in 1956. I don't know if this new movie coming out in the summer will place that kind of emphasis on it or not. But, of course, Hollywood cannot really capture what it must have been like to have been there. But the drama involved is because this is the basic moral code of humanity. And so to make sure that this is what's required and that we know it, tremendous events occurred to really scare people, you know, to shake them up before the commandments were given. You can read about it in Exodus 19. Now, the commandments were re-given by Moses in Deuteronomy. He wasn't quoting verbatim. He was explaining and reviewing. So they're not in every way, in every word the same. But in any case, we don't have to know exactly what God said. We have to know what the canon tells us, you know, what the scriptures preserve. So what we have to know is Exodus 20 and then elaborated on in Deuteronomy 5, as I'm going to talk about today. First, let me just show where they are discussed. Exodus 34 and verse 28. So this is when we're talking about Moses went up twice, as you know, because he broke them initially because of his reaction to the sinning. Exodus 34:28. So he was there with the Eternal 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water. And he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. In Hebrew, Aseret HaDevarim, the 10 words. And these words represent, in effect, the 10 basic statements of principle, I guess you could say. Aseret HaDevarim is what it says in the biblical Hebrew. Later on, rabbinical Hebrew called them Aseret HaDibrot. But here they're Aseret HaDevarim. I want to go to Deuteronomy 4. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 13. As I said, you know what Deuteronomy means if you have some knowledge of etymology. It's the second law. So Deuteronomy is what is called by the Jews Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the law, or just it's called mainly the Book of Devarim, the Book of Words, because that's how it begins. Ve'eleh ha-Devarim, right? And these are the words. So it's basically called by Hebrew-speaking people the Book of Devarim, or words. So anyway, let's go to Deuteronomy 4:13. So he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform. And of course, that covenant was ratified on Pentecost of 1447 BC, and we're commemorating it soon. So he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, the Ten Commandments, and he wrote them on 2 tablets of stone. One more comment, and that is Deuteronomy 10 and verse 4. You know, back in the old days of the communication, what do we used to call those things in cars that people used to use before we had cell phones? The CBs, right. Thank you. The CBs. It goes back to a very old television program that used to be the rival of Dragnet. Most people know about Jack Webb and Dragnet, but there was a rival program. I think the author's name was Broderick Crawford. It was called Highway Patrol, and it was like a rival of Dragnet. But on that program, people used to say 10-4, and then it became the what people would say when they had those CBs. So let's go to Deuteronomy 10:4. And he wrote on the tablets, according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments, Aseret HaDevarim, the ten words, which the Eternal had commanded you in the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly, and the Eternal gave them to me. So you see, as dramatic as was the first giving of those laws, the people still sinned so badly. And so they were given again, in a less dramatic way, but they were re-given, and they are forever valid. The Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, the basis of really of civilization. Exodus 20. And God spoke all these words saying, now here's what I'm going to say to you now. I'm so thrilled that some of you are joining me in trying to memorize two new verses, not two new verses, but one new verse for Pentecost. I know I'm working on two, and I know somebody else wrote in, said he's working on two. That's fine. If you want to work on just one, that's fine too. So some of you are trying to memorize a new verse, in some cases a new couple of verses for Pentecost. But I hope all of you could just roll out of bed in the middle of the night and tick off the commandments. I don't mean every word and every comma, but I mean that you can tick off the commandments, that you can say, you shall have no other gods before me, right? That you shouldn't have, that you should not have idolatry, that you should not take God's name in vain, keep the Sabbath, honor your parents, no murder, no adultery, no stealing, no lying, no coveting, right? You can do that. I hope so. If not, learn it, you know. Learn to be able to tick those off. If you roll out of bed in the middle of the night, half grogged, you can still, you know, maybe splash some water on yourself if you need to, cold water, and then, you know, recite them. That's very important. Anyway, so Exodus 20, and God spoke all these words saying, I am the Eternal your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Okay, now, there's some discussion about how to divide them up. The original Jewish tradition that we have, the oldest one, is from Philo and Josephus. I will check those out because I own the works of Josephus and of Philo, at least sufficiently to check them out. But as far as I understand, both Philo and Josephus divide up the Ten Commandments, as I will today, as does the Greek Orthodox Church, as I will today. Now, the Rabbinic Judaism in the Talmud, which came later than Josephus and later than Philo, divided them up differently. And I think they did so as a kind of anti-Christian measure. I think they wanted to focus on the uniqueness of the people of Israel. And so they have made this introductory statement as one of the commandments. The way Orthodox Jews learned the Ten Commandments is that the first one is Exodus 20 and verse 2. And then all of the false worship are combined in one. And so having no other gods plus no idols is all in one. That's the second commandment. Then from that point on, they agree with the Protestant world. Now, almost all Protestants divide them up as I'm going to today. Almost all Protestants do. Not that I'm a Protestant, but I'm not Greek Orthodox either. But the way I'm dividing them up is the way the Greek Orthodox divides them up and the way almost all Protestants divide them up. They are commandments, and so that's how I'm looking at them. There's an introductory statement, though, which would be appropriate to show you that these are divine commandments that we had better observe. And so there's a very important intro. And God spoke all these words saying, I am the Eternal your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And then comes commandment number one, as far as I'm concerned. You shall have no other, and not just, I don't mean just, you know, obviously not just me, but I gave you the sources. You shall have no other gods before me. So there we go with commandment one. Now, if you look at the book of Deuteronomy where they're restated, there are 21 chapters expounding on these commandments. You go from Deuteronomy 5, and then you read the 6th chapter all the way through the 27th chapter, and they're expounding on these commandments. That was brought out to me by a man named Alan Heath back in 1970. And it is true. You can check it out. If you study it, Deuteronomy 6 through 27, you're expounding on the commandments repeated in Deuteronomy 5. Now I want to go to, before I even read any further, I'm interrupting myself. I guess that's polite, right? A person can interrupt himself. Let's go to Isaiah 42, 21. Kind of reminds me of what Jackie Mason likes to say. He says, I talk to myself. Because I find when I talk to other people, they don't really listen anyway. So I just cut out the middleman and talk straight to myself. Then he also says, I like to talk to myself because I like to talk to a better class of people. But anyway, I'm interrupting myself. Isaiah 42, 21. Adonai chafetz leman shidko yagdil Torah v'yadir. This is Isaiah 42, 21. The Eternal is well pleased for its righteousness' sake. He will exalt the law and make it honorable. Oh, isn't that interesting? Let's go back over that again. The Eternal is well pleased for his righteousness' sake. So he knows what he's doing, and it's all going to work out. He will exalt the law and make it honorable. You know, this was really fulfilled in a special way with the Sermon on the Mount. Now, we had Mount Sinai, and then we had the so-called Sermon on the Mount there in Galilee, where Jesus went to a mountain, and not as high as Sinai, and talked to his disciples, and others were eavesdropping and heard it, and it became, of course, now part of the Scripture in any case. And he expounded on these Ten Commandments, and if I have a chance, I'll go into some of what he said there, because he made them more binding in a spiritual sense. So let's go back to Exodus 20. Verse 2-3, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth, not against art, but keep reading. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. So let's not use amulets, charms, idols, drawings, and so on as a part of worship. It should not be part of worship. I mean, you can have beautiful buildings, and beautiful, you know, art, I would suppose, is part of maybe the buildings, but you've got to be careful that these are not worshipful things. You know, you don't have maybe, something that you're going to worship, you know, or you think of some as like a lucky charm or something. You shall not make for yourselves a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Eternal your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, and but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. So you see the difference between his anger versus his mercy. Mercy, what a difference. But I would like to focus on verses 5 and 6 at another time. I want to do a more detailed study and review of verses 5 and 6 and comment on them at another time. If any of you have any input on them, then feel free to contribute, and I'll try to talk about that down the line. But certainly it shows you the contrast between God's anger and his mercy. Verse 7, you shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Now, people make so many excuses to get around this, and it's so common now that it's so much a part of our culture that we've really got to be careful. You know, we have come to the point in 5774, in the Roman year 2014, we've come to the point where people are so spiteful now that they want to do whatever they're not supposed to do, even in little things. For example, you know, God says in the Bible, don't tattoo yourself. It's everywhere. Now, a lot of people who do it don't even, I suppose, know that it's in the Bible, but it seems to me that there's just this tendency to look for every little picky little thing, if you want to look at it that way, that God says don't do, and then do it. And OMG is now on sweatshirts, you know. I saw a comedy, a very nice, a very pleasant comedy, very, very interesting. And I'm not much of a movie fan. In fact, the reason I wound up seeing it is because I was originally forced to. I was in a classroom where it was shown, and I was the teacher, so I had to be there. I mean, I wasn't the one who initiated it, but my superiors initiated it, so I saw it. But it was a fine movie. But in that movie, God's name was taken in vain so often in the movie, and it was a family oriented comedy. That's just the way we are as a culture, and that's really sad, because we have to have a reverence for God's name, an awe. You know, we want to really be respectful. And that's one reason why it's constantly taken in vain, because that's not what people, that's not what the cultural elite wants you to do. The cultural elite wants you to, in fact, not that, be that respectful of God's name, because they want to undermine the morality of the Bible. There is a definite desire among our elite to attack the morality of the Bible. I know, because I've been there. I've been in these universities, and I've been taught by people who are the authorities, the ones who write the books, who give the doctorates out. I got a doctorate. You know, and the ones who give them out really work very hard to undermine people's beliefs, and when they have them in the classroom, you would be very dumbfounded if you knew, you know, the kind of what was said to me, for example. But anyway, I don't want to get into all of that. A lot of you have experienced it too. I'm not unique. A lot of you have gone to university, and if you've taken philosophy courses or religion courses or Bible courses, you know what went on in your classrooms. Anyway, let's go on to the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, the Sabbath is very important, and it was originally given so that all people would keep it. Now, at this point, it's given to Israel, but eventually the time will come when it will be universally observed, and that's what the original idea was with Adam and Eve. You know, the Sabbath was originally for human beings. Later on, you know, it became particularly a day associated with Israel. And that's why the Jews have retained their identity as the people of Israel, because the Jews have remained with the Sabbath. And as one of their great poets said, it is not that Israel has kept the Sabbath, but the Sabbath has kept Israel. And ironically, when the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel was given, it was, interestingly, coincidentally, given on a Friday. So when you read the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, it says, on something along the lines of, on the eve of the Sabbath, we hereby declare, you know, so the Sabbath is mentioned in the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, so they unwittingly, in effect, have admitted that the very fact that they are still here as Israel is to a degree because they continue to keep the seventh-day Sabbath. But if you go to Mark, the second chapter, we see that Jesus Christ has the right to explain how properly to keep the Sabbath. He's the one who gave the commandment in the first place, because after all, the word of God spoke to them. So it was in effect a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ who's commanding them there. Mark 2:27, and he said to them, Mark 2:27, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. So who can tell us how to keep the Sabbath? Not the rabbis in the Talmud, but Jesus Christ and the apostles. So we keep the Sabbath as the apostles, you know, not a rabbinic Sabbath, but an apostolic Sabbath, if you want to look at it that way. As particular, hopefully a Christian Sabbath. Yeah. Anyway, to continue on, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, and the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter. You'll see seven here. You nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger, you know, seven, who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So by keeping the seventh day Sabbath, we declare we're worshiping the God of the Bible, the God who inspired these words. Our God is the God who said that he created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh, and we honor him on that day, and we show ourselves to be worshiping of Yahweh, the God of the Bible. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long, as I quoted from Ephesians. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Eternal your God is giving you. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery. These are written in the individual. It is thou shalt not. It is each of you. It is not collective, but each of you. You and I and each person, you know, thou shalt not. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant. Again, I think there'll be seven here. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, wife, male servant, female servant, ox, donkey, or anything. So seven. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. And when you covet, when you want something that isn't yours, when you get that, this is the only commandment that tends to be a thoughtful, you know, having to do with your thought. The other are actions you don't do or you do. But in this case, they're even in terms of thought, don't covet. And because that's the mother of so many wrong things, coveting, desiring something that isn't yours. And it's interesting because when you do that, that becomes an idol. That becomes something that stands between you and God and causes you to break God's law. And so the Ten Commandments kind of dovetail at the end. In the beginning of the Ten Commandments, it says, don't put any other God before me, and then don't worship idols, and then it ends with coveting, and they dovetail together, as is explained in Colossians 3. Colossians, the third chapter. In Colossians, the third chapter, and I want the fifth verse. It's in Colossians 3:5, it says, therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, and this would be, I would say, passion in the negative sense. There's a positive passion, as you see in Song of Solomon. This would be the negative side of it. Evil desire and covetousness, which is idolatry. So you see how the commandments kind of come together. The last one, covetousness, it becomes idolatry, and so you wind up violating the first couple of commandments as well, because something begins to take over mentally and obscure your understanding or weakens your will to be obedient when this covetousness comes in. I'd like to now go to Deuteronomy, where the commandments are restated and reviewed, and another dimension is given to the Sabbath. Let's go to Deuteronomy 5. Before I do that, though, I want to talk a little bit about how the New Testament expands upon the Ten Commandments. I want to go to 1 Corinthians 10, if I might. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 14. The experience of the Israelites in the wilderness shows you that you had better keep away from idolatry. You know, for example, like the golden calf. So he, after going over what the Israelites did in the wilderness negatively, you know, the bad example, he says, Paul, in his letter to the church at Corinth, his first letter to the church at Corinth, this is 1 Corinthians 10:14. You know, when I was first coming into the Church of God, which was at this time of year, first Bible study I attended was in Manhattan on May 6, 1968. And as I was attending the New York Church early in 19 in it, or in this in the in between Pentecost and I'm sorry between Days of Unleavened Bread and Pentecost in 1968, the minister there, David Bearer, who is now dead, he gave a series of sermons on 1 Corinthians, and I think he did so because he figured New York City was a modern Corinth, which, you know, in a way, there's quite a parallel between Corinth of the first century and the New York that I knew. You know, so he gave a couple of talks on Corinthians, as I recall. Anyway, in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 14, it says, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. So we have to be very careful to flee from idolatry, and I think you can apply that in different ways. You don't want to have personality cults. You know, obviously, you need to respect your pastor and respect the leader of your congregation and your teacher, but we don't have personality cults. And you know, your teacher is not, you know, the greatest teacher since John the Apostle or whatever, whoever that person may be, and he's not one of the two witnesses probably. You know, it'd be nice if some of you right now were being taught by one of the two witnesses, you know, as we say in Hebrew, halavai, you know, or in Spanish, ojalá que sí. You know, I wish that would be the case, but chances are it isn't, at this point, at this moment. So we want to respect our teacher and not be disrespectful, but at the same time, let's not, elevate our teacher to, in a wrong status. In effect, we're elevating ourselves when we do that. Because we're saying we're following the one, you know. I've seen that in religion so often. I have seen that many times in my experiences with organized religion. So he says, therefore, my beloved, flee idolatry. And then in the same book, I'll go back to the sixth chapter, and a very famous one, of course, in 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee sexual immorality. So the seventh commandment applies even before marriage, because fornication is in effect being unfaithful to your future mate. You don't want to have the experience of sex outside of marriage, period. You want to have it exclusively with your mate, not with anyone else. And even before marriage, fornication is therefore unfaithfulness to your future mate. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. So these are where, this is where the New Testament expands upon the Ten Commandments. And it goes so counter to our present culture, where a lot of the humor and a lot of the drama and what's talked about deals with such as what I read, what the Bible criticizes is often what we're wallowing in culturally in terms of our entertainment and what's being discussed and written about and so on, focused on. All right, now I go to Deuteronomy 5. And Moses called all Israel and said to them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. The Eternal our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. And, you know, when the Bible ends, he warns us about that. Whom did Jesus, in the vision, with whom did Jesus appear in that vision again on a mountain when he took Peter, James, and John and gave them a foretaste of the world tomorrow, as we call it? With whom did he appear? He appeared with Moses and Elijah. Because Moses was the one who brought the law, and Elijah is going to be the one to restore it. And if you go to the last prophet of the Old Testament, Malachi, let me go to Malachi because he's the last of the Old Testament prophets as the canon is beginning to close for the Old Testament. Verse 4 of Malachi 4. Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. So he tells us to remember them. And then, you know, John the Baptist did the same when he came 4 centuries later. And he was the Elijah to come, as we know, and there'll be yet another. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Eternal. And we know he's to restore, right? Jesus said in Matthew 17 and elsewhere. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse or with cherem, other destruction. All right, so anyway, here we go back to Deuteronomy 5. And Moses called all Israel and said to them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I don't want you to live in a bubble and think that if you're in the Church of God, you're the only one who believes the Ten Commandments are still valid. Most of Christianity believes that. There's a reason why Cecil B. DeMille came out with a movie called The Ten Commandments, which was a blockbuster, which everybody and his cousin went to see, because most churches do teach the Ten Commandments are still valid. Now, they have interpretations, here and there that are different, but don't think you're unique if you believe in the Ten Commandments. No. Fortunately, you're not. If you might be more special if you keep them. Verse 2. The Eternal our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Eternal did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. So he's talking to those who actually were there, the original witnesses of that. These are, of course, the children who have now grown up. You know, they're 40 years old, ready to go into the promised land. The Eternal talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. I stood between the Eternal and you at that time. He was a type of Jesus Christ, as we know. I stood between the Eternal and you at that time and declare to you the word of the Eternal, for you were afraid because of the fire and did not go up the mountain. He said, I am the Eternal your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, the Eternal your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commands. As I said, I would like to delve into those verses further at another time. You shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Some people use God's name in a way to manipulate other people. That's wrong. Some people do it for gain, monetary gain, or for status. They manipulate, you know, they use God's name in vain. So let's be careful about that. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Eternal your God commanded you. So you see, he's going over these rules. He's not necessarily trying to quote verbatim, word for word, what was originally said, but he's explaining. So here he says, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And then he gives a different purpose for it here. Let's say an additional purpose. 6 days you shall work and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor the stranger, your stranger who is within your gates. So he expands it so you don't get picky about it. You know, in other words, it's general. You don't work any of your animals, you know. Don't decide, well, this animal, I'll work this animal, or maybe leave this animal out. Just let your animals rest, you know. Nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. And remember, oh, here's something different. Now, back then, in the original giving of it, 40 years earlier, the focus was on the creation. Now the focus is on the fact that God liberated his people from Egypt, so he gave them one day a week as a day of rest to appreciate freedom and to recognize him as the great emancipator. Jesus Christ is the great emancipator. Years ago, I was in a church which published a booklet called A World Held Captive, and that's in effect what's going on. Right now, really, Satan and his demons control the world to a great extent. You know, as we read in 2 Corinthians 4:4, you know, he's the god of this world, and so on. And this world will eventually be liberated, emancipated, and the Sabbath pictures that time of freedom. And I'm going to show you a little bit more about that as I have a chance. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Eternal your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Eternal your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So we're also recognizing God as our liberator, our emancipator, God, the God who actually does concern himself with human beings. Not only is he the creator of the world, but we're not deists. You see, creator, if we acknowledge God as creator, you can say we're deists, but we are theists. We believe in a personal God who actually intervened for our ancestors in Egypt. And of course, we understand further, intervened in the greatest way, John 3:16, that he gave his own son for us. Honor your father and your mother as the Eternal your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Eternal your God has given you. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, his male servant, his female servant, his ox, his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. Do your best to work hard and be compensated for your labor and achieve whatever you can achieve. Or if somebody chooses to be nice to you and give you something so you can appreciate that, and so on. So they're repeated here. Now, regarding the Sabbath, a couple of things I'd like to talk about. Hebrews 4. And verse 9, the Sabbath does picture that time of peace and that time of freedom which is coming. And it does picture our freedom in the new covenant, our coming salvation. The Jews called the Sabbath Me'ein Olam Haba, a glimpse of the world to come. In Hebrews 4:9, we see the word Sabbatismos, Sabbath observance. Hebrews 4:9. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. So the Sabbath pictures that rest that is coming. We are already, in a way, are at rest if we're Christian, because we don't have the guilt and we look forward to the resurrection. But beyond that, there's a time we can look forward to, the great rest that is coming. And we have the Sabbath as a picture of the millennium, as we understand. And I want to go now to Matthew 11. Where Jesus also talks about the fact that if we are true disciples of Christ, we are in effect in a prolonged Sabbath, but we still should keep the Sabbath to remind us of that. But for many, you know, that's one reason we should keep it. But in Matthew 11, verse 28, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you, you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So the commandments of God the world describes as a burden, and they can be a burden in the sense that the world will persecute you for being obedient to the Ten Commandments, but in the long run, we are better off than others. They are really the ones who have the burden, because sin really creates burdens ultimately for everybody, and ultimately will be the greatest of burdens because it will ultimately lead to their death and even to cease to exist. You know, so really God's law is not a burden. I want to go to 1 John 5. There's the old story that I like to tell about the man who had a big bundle and it seemed like he was really straining to carry it. And they said, that seems to be a burden. And he said, oh yeah. And he opened up the bundle and showed them a bundle of beautiful, precious jewels. You think that it was a problem to him to carry them around? No. They would have loved to have had that burden themselves. The ones who felt like, well, that guy's, as we say in Yiddish, schlepping this bundle around. Well, yeah, you would too if you had a bundle of precious jewels. You'd schlep it around too. 1 John 5 and verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. This is one of the last books of the Bible to be written. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. And so, with your permission, I'm going to turn back to one more verse in the Old Testament before I finish, and that is back in Deuteronomy 5, where Moses repeats the Ten Commandments. He also says something that you all have heard before, and is very profound. That really, if only we had the right attitude, we would keep the Ten Commandments, and it would be just with the world, we would be happier, and the world would be better off. And that's why we have the New Covenant, which gives us God's Spirit, so we can understand and then do His will. So we have the New Covenant, which Pentecost pictures, and we're coming up to that time. It pictures the Old and New Covenant, as we understand. Pentecost is the birthday of the Old Testament Church, in a sense, and the New Testament Church. So let's go to Deuteronomy 5 with your permission. Oh, that they had such a, verse 29 of Deuteronomy 5. Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me, and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Well, with God's Spirit, that can be the case, though we're not going to be perfect. But we can be righteous without being perfect. Perfection will come when we're spirit. I'd like to conclude by going to Revelation, the 14th chapter. I often conclude by going to Revelation. So these were some comments on the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are valid. The Ten Commandments are a part of Christian living. And as I said, the 6th of Sivan is very likely the date of their giving, of their being given initially as a codified series of statements to the people of Israel. And then on Sunday, we'll be keeping Pentecost, picturing the ratification of the Old Covenant and the confirmation of the New Covenant, which brings God's Spirit to us in mass, where each individual Christian can receive God's Spirit and thus have the mind of God and the power of God to understand and to do God's will. So with that, we can be Christian commandment keepers. And so in Revelation verse 12, we'd like to consider ourselves saints. And here is how saints are defined. It says, here is the patience of the saints. And of course, in this day and time, we have to patiently continue on this commitment we have made. And if some of you out there have not made the commitment, I invite you to consider that. Revelation 14 and verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. So let's continue to be Christian commandment keepers. As I said when I began this talk, we have had 6 weeks counting towards Pentecost. We have one more week to go, and we will have the weekly Sabbath and then a holy day afterwards. So we have to plan ahead, so to speak, because we have 2 holy days coming back to back. So we have to consider that this week. We have the Sabbath, weekly Sabbath, and then the annual Sabbath, if you want to call it that, the holy day of Pentecost. We will have services, God willing, at 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Sabbath, at 3 p.m. Eastern time on Pentecost. And the next week, then, we will meet an hour earlier, and perhaps from that point on continue to do so if there is no problem with our regular listening audience to tune in an hour earlier. So in the meantime, all the best to you and yours.